They're people that have families, they have jobs. And so a lot of times it's easy to let voting slip away when you've got those pressing priorities.
All eyes turn toward the U.S. presidential election. It's Tuesday, November 3rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online as well at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, U.S. support for Uyghurs. Blasphemy cases rise. COVID mask effectiveness. India, Australia, and Malaysia face coronavirus. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. presidential election is upon us, and there are many diverse groups in the United States that can affect the outcome. Hispanics are expected to make up the largest minority voting group in the 2020 election. That's according to Pew Research Center. And just before the Tuesday vote, an NBC Wall Street Journal poll found former Vice President Joe Biden leading President Donald Trump by a 2-to-1 margin. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti reports on what's important to some Hispanic voters.
A common man's navy. Add the flags and this flotilla becomes a Trump-tilla, a weekly parade of ships in Florida. It's port of call to see President Trump cruise to victory.
God bless America.
60 million Hispanics live in the U.S. About half are eligible to vote. This election, they could be the largest minority voting group, outnumbering blacks. Hispanics have leaned Democratic since the 1980s, but they don't vote as a single bloc. Cubans are Florida's largest Hispanic group, and they typically vote Republican, like Jorge Rodriguez.
¿Por qué voy a votar por Trump? Porque en mi país.
I am going to vote for Trump because when the socialists entered my country, they promised a lot. By the time we realized what was really happening, by the time they removed the mask, it was too late and they had already grabbed power. I see the same in this country.
Older Cubans relate to the socialist label President Trump gave Democrat Joe Biden. It put the Biden campaign on the defensive to correct that.
Look, Joe Biden is not a socialist. Joe Biden is not a communist. Actually, the person who is an authoritarian leader is President Trump. That's the type of leader that you fled when you left Cuba.
The Democratic Floridian Hispanics are passionately against Donald Trump.
I've been wanting Trump out since he started.
So too, Alberto Cairo of Spain, who applied early for citizenship papers so that he could vote in this election.
Well, because I think that we need to kick out the current president. I'm pretty open about that.
But inside a Pentecostal church in Tennessee, Anki Sandoval is here every Tuesday night to pray for the president. She's voting in her first election since arriving from Honduras.
We are convinced of what God is doing through Trump. God appoints leaders and takes leaders down to be able to govern a country.
In Texas, the younger Hispanic population has grown at the Mexican border. But for voters like Alyssa Dale...
You know, I've had people my age even tell me that, oh, my vote doesn't matter. You know, I want this person, but I'm not going to vote.
That's a major issue for Joe Biden, says Professor Jim Henson of the University of Texas.
The youngest edge of that cohort, the 18 to 24, even 18 to 29-year-olds, turn out to vote at pretty low levels. So what that's meant is that the Democratic advantage in the Latino population has not translated directly into an advantage in the actual electorate.
Democratic organizers hope Trump's border wall and immigration views will activate new immigrants for Biden. But the Democratic Party's Jared Hakama struggles, too, with turnout of adults.
And there are people that have families, they have jobs. And so a lot of times it's easy to let voting slip away when you've got those pressing priorities.
So while Hispanics of 2020 have become the largest minority, getting them to actually vote could make the difference in these crucial swing states. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Miami, Florida.
VOA Asia will be following the election closely on tomorrow's program, as it will remain Tuesday here in the United States and as polling stations begin to close. Be sure to join us. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. Why deadly Philippine super typhoon ended up sparing lives. Thailand's king hints at compromise with protesters. United Nations says Myanmar's discriminatory laws cast doubt on fairness of elections. At least 50,000 people participate in anti-France protest in Bangladesh. Pakistan announces provisional provincial status for part of Kashmir. Expanded coverage of all these stories, and so much more, can be found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Issues connected to China have weighed on this year's presidential election, but one issue has not made much of an impact. Still, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has urged Indonesian leaders during his visit last week to speak up about the condition of ethnic Uyghur Muslims in China's Xinjiang region. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
On his tour of South Asia, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo continued his push against China. In meetings with Indonesian leaders, Pompeo accused the Chinese Communist Party, or the CCP, of being the greatest threat to religious freedom in the world. He said Beijing has brutalized Uyghur Muslims and other minorities under the pretense of countering terrorism or alleviating poverty. But the real goal, he said, is about surveillance and control. Speaking to a Muslim group, Pompeo urged them to show solidarity with ethnic Muslims in China.
I know that the Chinese Communist Party has tried to convince Indonesians to look away from the torments your fellow Muslims are suffering. I know that these same CCP officials have spun fantastic tales of happy Uyghurs eager to discard their ethnic, religious, and cultural identities to become more modern and enjoy the benefits of CCP-led development. When you hear these arguments, I just ask you to do this. Search your hearts.
The United States, other Western countries, and human rights groups strongly condemn the Chinese government for detaining more than 1 million Uyghurs in camps in Xinjiang, where they are forced to assimilate by having their Islamic heritage erased. China denies the persecution, calling the detention camps vocational centers. Human rights advocates have called on leaders across the world to speak up about the massive scale of the camps in China. Joanne Lin of Amnesty International welcomes Pompeo's comments.
China has a very despairing and atrocious human rights record, and it's critical that all world leaders, including world leaders of predominantly Muslim-majority countries, raise their concerns with Chinese authorities about China's treatment of Uyghurs.
Pompeo praised his host in Jakarta, saying Indonesia has been a model of a country where people of different faiths, different ethnic groups, and different political ideologies can coexist peacefully. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, officials and aid workers in the Philippines rushed to assess the damage after Typhoon Goni slammed into provinces south of Manila, killing 16 and sweeping away around 13,000 houses. The typhoon is the 18th to hit the Philippines this year and one of the strongest typhoons since 2013. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us for today's edition of VOA Asia. A recent surge in blasphemy cases has raised concerns among human rights groups. The Human Rights Commission of Pakistan has reported more than 40 cases of blasphemy in that country in the month of August alone. VOA's Arshad Momand visited the family of a man who was accused of blasphemy and filed this report, narrated by Roshan Noorzai.
Afsar Ali is trying to reassure his neighbors that he and his family are good Muslims. Some locals in Charsada Khyber Pakhtunkhwa have turned against him after his 61-year-old father, Maruf Gul, was accused of blasphemy, a crime punishable by death in Pakistan. Ali says that now his entire family could be at risk.
We could not sleep or eat. God knows how much our women cried. We were in shock. We had to go from a house to another. They were inquiring about us. A police officer came and told us that locals were saying that they knew about us and they wanted to kill us and burn our house.
The father has been accused of questioning the story of Ibrahim, offering to sacrifice his son Ismail to God. Ali refuses the claim, saying his father is targeted only because he socialized with members of the Shia sect.
They only have sectarian differences. He clarified about it before, but they still accuse him of being a Shia. Okay, you disagree with them, but my father's only problem was that he was socializing with them.
Police say that the case is under investigation and Gul's case will be presented in an anti-terrorism court at the end of October. If the allegations against Maruf Gul are confirmed, he could face the death penalty.
Decisions would be taken based on the laws. It's a very sensitive issue and should not be used to settle personal disputes.
According to the Human Rights Commission of Pakistan, more than 40 blasphemy cases against minorities, particularly the Shia community, were registered in Pakistan during the month of August alone. For Rashad Momand in Peshawar, Pakistan, this is Roshan Nurzai, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Former South Korean President Lee Myung-bak was sent back to prison from his home after a Seoul court upheld his 17-year prison term for corruption. Lee was convicted of taking bribes and being involved in other corruption-related activities while he served as president from 2008 to 2013. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, coronavirus continues its most recent surge, especially across Europe and here in the United States, where cases are topping 100,000 per day and overall about 230,000 people have died. Virologists at the University of Tokyo say that while masks can offer protection from airborne COVID-19 particles, their effectiveness varies. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo tells us more on the results of the new research.
Scientists used two mannequins, one coughing out droplets containing COVID-19 and the other equipped with a mechanism which imitates human breathing, inhaling virus particles.
There is no doubt that masks reduce the amount of the virus entering into bodies. But at the same time, we should not overestimate the effectiveness of masks.
Lead researcher and professor of virology Yoshihiro Kawaoka says the level of protection from the coronavirus depends on the type of mask one wears.
We compared three different types of masks, cotton, surgical, and N95 masks, by putting a mask on a mannequin inhaling the virus. The N95 mask was the most effective one. Surgical and cotton are second and third, respectively.
Takemasa Sakaguchi says using actual coronavirus made for a better experiment.
I see the effort that they exerted to get results as close to the actual condition of inhaling the virus as possible. I believe that the result is quite similar to real life.
On the streets of the capital, Tokyo, most appear to don some form of mask, but not all have the highest level of protection.
Tokyo has around 200 new infection cases every day, so I think, at least in Tokyo, we should wear a mask.
I'm used to wearing a mask since I have hay fever. I also wear it to protect myself from flu, especially in winter. During the summer, it was a bit challenging because it was really hot, but I think there was no problem wearing a mask.
Japan has more than 98,000 coronavirus cases. At least 1,700 people have died and over 90,000 have recovered from the virus, according to government data. Mariama Jalu, VOA News.
An Australian survey of more than 3,000 people has found more than 80% of Asian Australians have reported racial discrimination during the COVID-19 pandemic. The research is published as Australia marks the 45th anniversary of its Racial Discrimination Act. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Australian National University study has revealed that 84.5% of Asian Australians reported at least one case of discrimination between January and October this year during the coronavirus pandemic. Many have experienced xenophobia and racism, including physical assaults and verbal threats. The university survey has also shown that Asian Australians were more likely to have jobs and careers adversely affected by coronavirus lockdowns, and they were more anxious about the pandemic than the broader community. Researchers believe a spike in racial attacks and abuse is being driven by the fact that the coronavirus was first detected in China and by mounting political tensions between Beijing and Canberra. Jason Yat-Sen Lee is the president of the Chinese Australia Forum, a non-partisan organisation.
It's been pretty awful at a number of levels. I mean, I think Asian Australians, in particular Chinese Australians, have really been crunched by all the stuff that's been going on, the rising anti-CCP rhetoric, this whole narrative that this is a China virus, this was something that China brought to the world and it's China's fault. There's always a little bit of underlying sort of racism and prejudice anyway, and so these three things come together in a perfect storm.
The university research is published as Australia commemorates the 45th anniversary of its Racial Discrimination Act. The act made it illegal to treat someone unfairly because of their race. Events to mark the introduction of the law in 1975 have focused on racist attacks on Asian groups in Australia during the pandemic. After the United Kingdom, China is the country of origin for the second largest migrant community in Australia, making up about 2.5% of the total population. China has repeatedly accused Australia of being racist and in July warned its citizens not to travel here. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, India's months-long COVID-19 shutdown of schools has inspired new ways to teach students without access to online classes. Because they don't have smartphones, computers, or even internet connectivity. Anjana Pasricha visited the low-income district of Nuh in northern India to see how thousands of students there are being taught.
When the bell rings from a loudspeaker mounted on a van to announce the start of classes in Kanvarsika village, students settle down for lessons inside homes and in courtyards. Following a customary prayer, a teacher presents a chemistry class using a microphone from the street. The classes ensure that these students do not fall behind after missing months of school because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Ninth grade student Sania Ahmed says the classes help her keep pace with studies, Taking lessons at home also makes her feel safe from coronavirus. No district in northern India has found creative ways to teach students. From classes held in scores of village squares under an initiative called Community Schools, to the van that beams lessons into homes. Local volunteers and teachers conduct the classes that now reach 7,000 students in scores of villages. The initiative was launched after authorities found that most students in the low-income district could not log on to online classes because they did not have access to computers or smartphones.
Digital education hamare yahan safal nahi ho payi hai.
Primary school teacher Jamshed Khan, who teaches in Rigar village, explains that digital education could not work in the district because most families here are large and usually have only one phone. Eighth grade student Saista comes from such a family. She says there are three brothers and sisters in her family, but only her brother gets the phone, so she could not study. That is why these classes really help her. In Rigar, the community classes have expanded from 5 to 15.
71.
Younger students learn numbers and writing, while older students are taught English and math during two-hour sessions. In the open space, they sit at a distance in keeping with COVID-19 protocols. The local volunteers called education ambassadors who conduct the two-hour sessions range from teachers to postgraduates, such as Khushi Mohammed. Mohammed says he joined the initiative after losing his job in a private school. For many ambitious students, these classes are crucial. An 8th grade student, Faizan Khan, says his test scores will determine whether he can pursue science courses. Khan says he wants to become a doctor and the classes are giving him confidence that he will get good grades when schools reopen. With schools still closed though, the community school initiative is helping ensure that the pandemic does not cost thousands of students a year of school. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Rigar, India.
Volunteers in Malaysia are stepping up to help a remote area of that country that has been especially hit hard by the coronavirus. It's a story of struggle with hope. Dave Grunenbaum reports from Shah Alam, Malaysia.
At the storage site, box after box of donated food and personal protective equipment, or PPE. The boxes are headed to Semporna, a remote site in Malaysia where COVID-19 cases are surging. Thousands of people are in lockdown. Some live in communities that can only be reached by boat.
Okay, they don't have access to things like pharmacies, shopping malls and things like that. Because if you understand the geographical nature of Semporna, some are even living in what we call a sea village. Sea villages, they have houses on stilts in the middle of the sea. So you don't have this. And right now, a lot of them are not allowed to leave that village on stilts.
Zach Ho dropped off some powdered milk formula and Milo.
Yeah, we feel like every contribution helps. So we just contribute, even though it's a very small amount, but we hope that it helps the situations in the Semporna.
This donation drive is run by a charity group called Kembara Kitchen, which for years has provided food to the needy, those affected by natural disasters, and more recently to coronavirus frontline workers.
You do not need to be a very big person to have a very big impact. If everybody comes together, the unity in it involved, in people coming in to help each other out, you create a lot of effect.
The volunteers include Tan Mei Ling, a piano teacher whose music school is currently closed down because of COVID restrictions.
And since I was free, I couldn't teach, so I just came to help and it feels good.
And this is where we're putting all our blood, sweat and tears to help the ones in Semporna, given their conditions at this point of time.
With the help of these volunteers and donors, more than 4 tons of aid has been sent to fight COVID-19 in a remote part of the world. Dave Grunenbaum for VOA News, Shah Alam, Malaysia.
That's our program today on VOA Asia. Be sure to join us tomorrow for a special edition of VOA Asia as it remains Election Day here in the United States and polls begin to close. Our VOA Asia team includes Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.